Hello and welcome to Undaunted, where each episode I talk to fellow podcasters from all walks of life and discuss what went well, what went wrong, and what just didn't matter. We'll share the good, the bad, the many highs and lessons and laughs and lows along the way. Today, I'm joined by Lions of Nostalgia Goggles at nostalgiagoggles.audio. How are you doing today, Lions?
I'm really good, man. I'm happy to talk to you.
You've got a really interesting podcast, actually, that I've listened to, and you've got a little bit more of a history behind your podcasting, so let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if we start at the beginning, as they say, the first show I did was called Flipping Tables, and it was with a buddy of mine. We basically worked together in an office, and every morning we would walk in, and as we were like getting coffee and putting our stuff down, we would just kind of bitch about, you know, the latest Apple announcements, latest Google announcements, whatever was going on. And then one day he was like, dude, we should podcast. And I was like, oh, that'd be really cool. And then I kind of dragged my feet and didn't do anything. But he is a musician. So he had all the equipment. He had all the audio mixing knowledge. And one day he just showed up with mics and was like, hey, guess what? This is happening. So we sat down and we recorded our first episode, and it ballooned from there. We ended up recording 150 episodes every single week of Flipping Tables. At the 1 year mark, we spun it into a network called Sunrise Robot, sunriserobot.net. If you want to see the archive, it's still there. And at our max, we had 6 shows about all different cultural things. And it was a lot of fun. But he moved on. He abandoned me. I'm left holding the mic all by myself. And he moved on. He changed careers, and it just became kind of like time burdensome for him. So we decided, instead of replacing him and everything, we just shut it down. And I wasn't done. Like, I was still super hungry to keep podcasting, but I didn't want to do like a kind of like a lame reboot. You know, like, you ever watch a show where they like replace your favorite character with a different actor, or they sub out on a podcast and like, oh, so and so got a new job, so we're replacing, and it's just, it has different chemistry, it doesn't feel right.
Right. It's just not the same show.
Yeah, it's really different. Sometimes it's still good, but you can't break away from like how it used to be. So I was thinking about what I was going to do next, and there was a show that I wanted to put on Sunrise Robot, and I just never kind of got off my ass and got it rolling. And my best friend was visiting me over the holidays in December, and he was like, hey, I've been thinking about maybe trying out podcasting. Like, do you think you'd want to do a podcast? And I was like, hell yes. I already have a show and a name, and I already know exactly what I want to do. You basically just need to sit in front of a microphone, and that's your entire contribution. So I'd already planned out Nostalgia Goggles. I already had a name in mind. I already even reached out to an independent musician. I had the theme song picked out. Like,
nice.
I was ready to go. So I explained the concept to him, which is basically just like, we replay classic games, and then we get together and kind of rip them to shreds for you know, what's supposed to be an hour and what always turns into 90 minutes. And that's what we're doing now. And it's, gosh, today we just released episode 11 because it's bi-weekly. But it's a lot of fun. It's a huge departure from what I was doing, where I had to like keep up with the news and know kind of what was going on. And now, like, we just had Google I.O., WWDC is coming up. And like, I feel like the tech podcaster monkey on my back. Like, you ever get that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, I should be keeping up with this. But then I remember I don't have to talk about it authoritatively into a microphone. And I'm like, oh, I can ignore this if I want to. And it's a little freeing.
I can hear the recaps and not have to worry about not summarizing the same way they did.
Pretty much. Because, I mean, you have to listen to all the news to make sure you contribute something like new and valuable, or at least like a different take or something.
Or an effective summarization.
Something valuable. Yeah. Like it's just, when we started Flipping Tables, my co-host and I agreed we did not want to be news of the week, because I love Twit. I love 5x5. I love Relay FM. They already do all that super well. Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
We did not need to try and jump into the most crowded podcasting marketplace there was.
Yeah. That's actually an interesting take on that, because I hear a lot of people, especially on talking on this show, about trying to find your niche and, you know, focusing on what you're really passionate about. And it sounds like you went from something that you're passionate about, but that you couldn't really find a really good place for. that was fun to do into something that now I don't know of many other retro gaming podcasts done the way that you're doing it, with just one game per episode and just talking about every aspect of that game, from the graphics to the sound to how, you know, how pixels are laid out on the screen versus how your eyes want them to be laid out on the screen. It's kind of an interesting take.
Yeah, so when I started this idea, I had such a long time to kind of incubate it, because I think I literally thought it up about a year before we actually launched it. So I bounced it off my co-host and off some of my other friends and other people I know who are podcasters. And so I had a lot of time to incubate it. And what made the biggest difference to me was when I finally settled on what we were going to do and who my co-host was going to be and that we were actually going to launch, is the main difference between Sunrise Robot and what we're doing with Nostalgia Goggles is, I said, I want to do this exclusively because I want to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to sit around and talk about old video games with my best friend. And I think we have funny and interesting things to say, but the goal of our podcast is to have that conversation. And then I just hope that other people find it interesting, find it funny. You know, maybe it makes them go back and play an old game they had forgotten all about and have a nice, you know, weekend on the couch when it's raining and they want something to do. Like, I really, because with Sunrise Robot, like we really hoped like maybe it would grow into something where we could have, you know, sponsors, or it would, you know, get us to, you know, into places we might not have otherwise been invited, you know, mm-hmm. as podcasting royalty.
But or just a press pass.
Yeah, just something, right? Something. Actually, one of our shows was a music show, and the guy who was a co-host on that was also a huge nerd, and he routinely went to this conference in Europe, Gamescom with an M. Mm-hmm. And he actually, I don't think it had anything to do with us, but he regularly got a press pass, and then he would come and, like, you know, do a little guest spot on Flipping Tables and that kind of stuff. I was like, oh, that'd be cool if that happened. And then more and more, I realized I don't have the wherewithal to put in the effort necessary to make that happen. Mm. Like, I'm not going to get out there and cold email people and knock on doors and pound the pavement, because that's not what podcasting means to me. Right. And that was part of why, you know, shutting down what we were doing was sad but doable, because it wasn't like, how am I going to feed my kids? This is like my primary income. So, switching to Nostalgia Goggles was like, as long as I can cover the fees to host the MP3s, like, this is all just a net win, because every single conversation is super fun. I really enjoy replaying the old games, and the games we don't enjoy replaying, we get to make fun of for 2 hours. So it's
right.
Right. So it's like, it's just all a net win.
I've talked to people about having people they're very familiar with, especially best friends and things like that, because that's what my primary show is. It's a conversation between my best friend and I as we geek out about stuff, and we invite guests and things like that. How did you feel about the transition between going from someone you work with that you get along with to someone you've known for, you know, decades?
You know, the biggest difference was actually in like microphone comfort. You know, the when you've been podcasting for a while, you start to kind of just internally know, oh, I need to clear my throat, I should turn my head away, or, oh, I need to take a sip of water, I probably shouldn't push the, you know, the plastic water bottle together right in front of the microphone. And you sort of learn, because, I mean, I'm Italian, and some stereotypes are true. We talk with our hands, we pace. Like, it took me a while to get good mic technique. And the guy that I started recording with, you know, we're friends, we get along well, but he's a musician. Like, his mic technique was amazing. Like,
right.
he knew exactly what he was doing. He was super comfortable in front of a microphone. And if you listen to like early episodes of Flipping Tables, I'm kind of like, hey guys, we're going to talk about technology. And it's like, there's this huge departure, because like the microphone is scary, and, you know, and like, you know, you jump to like episodes in the triple digits, and I sound, you know, if you ever met me in person, you'd be like, oh, that's exactly what he sounds like.
Right.
Because I learned how to be comfortable and how to deliver that way in front of a microphone. And the guy I record with now, him and I have that rapport. So the rapport is already there. We know how to tell stories. You know, we went to college together. You know, we can finish each other's sentences half the time. And his mic technique is not there. Like, it's good because I told him what to do, but it's all something he has to think about. And fortunately, you know, modern editing and recording equipment is good enough that we still are able to put out like a polished product. But every once in a while, like, I have to message him during the show and I'm like, stop banging the table with your elbows. it's like yeah, I can cut that out in post, but I'd rather not have to cut it out in post.
It's funny, your unconscious tick is causing me 3 hours of work. Can we stop that? Can we make that not happen anymore?
Exactly. And the funny thing is he's actually putting his elbows on the table because it forces him to lean closer to the microphone.
Oh, nice.
So he's doing it. His heart's in the right place, right? Like, he's doing it for the right reasons. But that is the biggest difference. And the good news for me, and I think for the longevity of the show, is the rapport, like how we are, you know, as a conversationalist, I think that's very long and slow and hard to build up. But the mic technique, like that's just practice. That's a skill. He'll learn that skill, and then I won't have to edit out, you know, table bumps and stuff. But it's a big difference. I mean, I'm lucky to count my former co-host as one of my friends. So, I mean, I think we had a pretty good rapport by the end of it, but it's hard to go against, you know, like, oh, I've known this guy for like half my life and we live together and, you know, like, I'm friends with his wife and his kid and he knows my wife and my kids. And mm-hmm. like, that's hard to fake. Right.
Yeah. But then it's also, there's a certain matter of having to overcome that, because as has been stated many times before, you have inside jokes that don't fly to the audience unless they're kind of explained in a certain way, or that you have a you know, you have to give a certain buffer to, like, you make a joke and he laughs at it, but then that doesn't transfer over to the audience at all. So is that something that you've had to consciously work on, or is that just something that doesn't happen with the two of you?
Yeah, that is something that I tried to make him aware of before we recorded our first episode, because I'm sure there's official names for all the different types of podcasts, but ours is very much like it's two white dudes talking, like, it's, you know, it's not polished like an NPR show is. It's not Serial. It's not, you know, it's not a weekly news show like Twit style. So, I mean, it's probably the most common kind of podcast, but because it's super conversational, because we know each other so well, I told him beforehand, you know, we are hoping for an audience, right? Like, we do want people to be listening, but we have to talk as if they're not listening, but that they'd understand if they were. So like, I pretty much told him, I was like, try. And I mean, if you listen to the episodes, like, you'll hear every once in a while, we will like address the audience, right? You know, right. The capital T, capital A audience. But I try really hard not to do that, because I think that's a different kind of thing. And I find that the podcasts I enjoy the most, where, like, when I'm going through Pocket Casts, the one true podcast client, when I'm going Agreed. Through Pocket Casts, and right, it's just the best, sponsored by Pocket Casts. But when I'm looking at like what I'm going to listen to next, because I don't just go in chronological order, right? So like I'll jump to a show that I know I enjoy listening to more. And I've found over, you know, years of listening to podcasts that the ones I enjoy listening to the most are the ones that I feel like I'm in the living room with them, or I'm sitting at the coffee shop with them and we're just having a conversation mm-hmm. and I just haven't said anything yet. So that was like the kind of show I wanted to do, because, I mean, it's corny. I know it's cliche advice, but to be like, you know, make the podcast you would want to listen to, but that's exactly what I'm doing.
Nice. Nice. Very cool. What other than, you know, going from the novice to the master and having your own novice to teach, what other problems have you had with you know, producing a new podcast? I'm sure creating the first one was more hands off, but the second one, you know, Nostalgia Goggles, you've been elbow deep in the entire time. So how was that transition, and what have you learned along the way of creating a podcast versus just jumping in with someone else who's doing most of the work?
Yeah, I was very lucky in that I had some kind of ramp up time, and I didn't know what I was preparing for, but it worked out really well, because when we started Sunrise Robot and we went from, you know, one show to six shows basically over the span of like 2 weeks, I was only hosting one of them. So my co-host from Flipping Tables basically said, hey, if we're going to do this, you need to be able to edit and you need to be able to produce. So he, you know, taught me what I needed to know. And, you know, for the first, I don't know, couple of months, maybe I would like send him the mix and I would be like, hey, how does this sound? And he'd be like, tweak this, change these levels. And, you know, podcast editing is not like producing music. It is leaps and bounds simpler. Like it's, you learn a few terms and then you basically know everything you need to know. Actually, I do all my editing in Logic, which feels like taking a space shuttle to go pick up milk at the store. Like it's so overpowered for what I actually need. But because the guy who taught me was a musician, he was like, this is what I know. So this is what you're going to learn. So like I learned from him and, you know, I mean, if you've ever used like a sophisticated DAW, they all have presets, right? So like my de-esser and my default compression settings and all that stuff, like I don't remember any of that crap. Like I just go in and I use the presets and then I tweak them as needed, you know. Oh, he was kind of quiet, I was kind of loud, I'll bring my levels down, I'll bring his levels up, and then, you know, bing bang boom, you ship it. Like it's a lot easier than producing a friggin' studio album. But because I had that like kind of handoff time where I was taking over responsibility, but I still had him to rely on, by probably around like episode 70 of Flipping Tables, like I edited that full time. I did all of the production work and it got to the point where like he wasn't checking my work. He was just like, I trust you to ship this now. And he was hosting, two of the other shows and producing three of them. So So I had to take that over for him for Flipping Tables. Otherwise it would have just been way too much work, for one person to do, unless it was his full-time job, which as I said, we never got there. Right. So moving into Nostalgia Goggles was kind of a switch in pace because not only was I already prepared for the editing process, but the recording process changed pretty dramatically. So right now you and I are using Skype, which I think basically full time now is for podcasters. I don't think anybody uses Skype for anything else anymore. And when my buddy and I decided,
would think it would be better for podcasting since so many of us use it for podcasting.
I don't think Microsoft wants it to be just for podcasting. I think that's just the way it's turned out. But the guy that I record with, his primary home computer is a Chromebook. So,
oh, interesting.
Right. So I was like, yeah, there's a Skype web app, but it's kind of a pain in the ass. And so he was able to get a decent USB mic. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. Affiliate link in the show notes. I'm just kidding. But there's a pretty decent USB mic that you can also upgrade to use XLR. I think it's Audio Technica. But it's a pretty decent mic. It's like $90 or something. And it comes with a little stand and it comes with a little pop filter and it's fine. But you have to make sure you're on a pretty decent connection because I'm only recording him on my end. Everything we used to do, all six of our shows, five of our six shows, were double enders. So we had high quality audio on both sides. We could mix them independently. And, right. And with Nostalgia Goggles, we just couldn't do that. So we actually use, it's a WebRTC client called a peer.in. Have you ever heard of that one?
Yep.
So I actually record that audio on my end and then my local audio. And then because that's coming over, the WebRTC, it's like a little bit pre-compressed and like, it's a little bit, messed with to get it to the lowest, bandwidth needs possible. And then there's not really a lot you can do to that. Like I can cut chunks out. Right. I can, I can de-ess it. Like I throw a de-esser on there. But I don't really gate it and I don't really put a compressor on it because it's sort of already compressed. And then my audio, gets like I slap the pre-settings on there and tweak them a tiny bit. And then, the thing that's awesome about that for me is, surely, mixing double enders is a huge pain in the ass because you got to line all that stuff up.
And especially if they're really long, like if you go over half an hour on a double ender, you're having to trim something out of one of the tracks God. To make it match time and. Especially if you're on an unreliable or older computer where it doesn't even keep the same beat
the clock speed.
It just changes. So you got to multiple. And if you're doing video, then you have to sync it all to the video because you don't want the video jumping in the middle of it. I understand.
Yeah, all that misery, all that went away. So I'm a better audio producer now than I've ever been. And I'm now doing the lazier version of audio production because I record, you know, his audio and then I record my audio separately. And then those two tracks are pre-lined up, you know, because I mean, they happened in real time together. And I just, you know, I do the edits if there are any, but we're almost live to tape. That was one of the things I told him I wanted to do is go live to tape whenever we could. So it's basically like add music and ship. It's cool. And it's one of the things that has allowed me to focus more on the show. It's not quite as hands-off as having like an external producer who mixes for me, where I just, you know, get back a finished MP3, but it's about as close as you can get.
That's essentially how I do this show is, I have your audio coming in through Skype on the right channel. My audio is going into my mixer on the left channel. And then those two are coming out into Audition on separate tracks. And then of course yours is pre-compressed. So luckily with Audition, I've got a system where it's just click, 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 click. My audio matches your audio. And as long as there's no big breaks or any problems with the Skype feed or anything else, boom, it's done. And I know for me, minimizing that editing time has been key to me having a large family and a weekly podcast. Because without the checklist style, click this, click this, click this, I'm done and it's moving on, I wouldn't have the time to continue podcasting at all.
Oh, for sure. Because I mean, it's got to be like a 4-to-1 ratio, right? Like if you have a minute of audio and you don't have a good process, you have 4 minutes of time getting that audio like trued up and you know, applying compressors and everything. Like if you had to do that from the beginning every single time and you couldn't use some of these sophisticated audio editing tools, podcasting would only be a full-time job because there'd be no other way to get the work done. Or everybody's podcast would be 10 minutes long, which, do you remember Briefs.fm? This is like a total tangent, but do you remember that?
I do not.
So Ben Orenstein, who's like a pseudo internet personality, I guess he's like a tech guy. He did an experiment where he released this audio platform, and the whole point of it was to ease access for new podcasters. So it did two interesting things. Is one, it used exclusively automatic processing. So you would record your episode and it would use magic to, you know, apply compressors and to do whatever, but there was no mixing and no producing. So like you didn't have theme music, you didn't have sensor beeps if you're a big F-bomb dropper or anything. Like you're just you just shipped whatever you recorded. But the other thing is that it cut you off at 3 minutes.
Okay.
So the idea was like, oh, you're out in the world, you open up like this iPhone app or whatever, and you talk into it for 2.5 minutes, and then you hit stop and it ships an episode. And if you want to write like some markdown, you know, show notes or something. And it was like a different take on the idea of podcasting, kind of almost like, I'm sure he would hate this, but almost like the Twitter of podcasting.
Okay.
You know, like how can we enforce these constraints? And then what kind of interesting things will these constraints enforce on people? And I was an early tester for that. And I stuck with it for a little while. And I did, my show was kind of dumb. It was basically like, I would just grab random microphones to test how well the algorithmic mixing worked. But the algorithmic mixing was actually really good. So after like the fourth or fifth one, I was like, these are all identical. I'm going to stop.
This is a really good idea on a 3-minute podcast that ends up lasting about 3 minutes of my attention span. Okay, moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would basically like, I would grab a rant because I mean, the whole point was like record a podcast from your smartphone. Right. So I would go out on the street where there was like a lot of road noise. And I would, you know, say like, this is the mic I'm using. This is the surroundings I'm in. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like I was basically doing research and on for the benefit of the podcasting community. But, you know, after like the third or fourth one of those, I was like, okay, I think I feel like this, I understand where this is going. And then when I hit like the fifth or sixth one, I was like, yeah, I think I'm done. Like I've figured out pretty much all that can be figured out here.
Nice. This,
I don't really count that one, but I guess technically I've hosted 3 podcasts.
Hey, whatever you count, that's what we count here at Undone. We're here to tell your story, not make it up for you.
Yeah, free podcast. I'm a professional.
And that's it's an interesting word, professional, especially when you talk about podcasting, because there's no defined line on being a professional. I like to say that anytime you get paid to do anything, you're professional. So I've been a professional stand-up comedian, a professional party host, a professional DJ, a professional KJ. Like I've had all these jobs that at one time I got paid $20 to do, and why not, right?
Yeah, man, put it on your CV.
Hell yeah. And I've been on the mic for 33 years, because when I was 7 years old, somebody gave me a lollipop to sing a song, whatever. As far as like your version of professional and your success as a podcaster, what metrics do you use, and how are you doing against those metrics?
Well, so with Flipping Tables, our original metric was basically like, we just want to try this out. Neither of us had, he had done like a little bit of podcasting before, but nothing like serious, and it was spotty. So this was, with Flipping Tables, our success metric was, can we put out a product we're proud of on a schedule? So it's like, can we every single week, will we come in, record, mix, produce something that we're proud of, and then get it out on the internet? And that was our success metric for a while. And because, I mean, a lot of my career has been up in front of people presenting. So once I got used to being in front of Mike, the idea of talking, for a hobby did not scare me that much.
Right.
So I got over that hump pretty fast. And Mike, my co-host, already knew what he was doing on the production side. So that was like a super fast hurdle to get over. So basically, it was all about the discipline. And once we got to like episode 40, we realized, and we went, when I say 40 episodes, it was 40 weekly episodes. We never missed a week. I think 2 weeks we were released like a day late. But we were pretty proud of like, hey, we, for no money and just for ourselves, like we were able to be disciplined about this. So that was when we decided like, let's try and maybe expand this and like turn it into a network. 'Cause we had friends and family that had ideas for shows and can we maybe like open up a Patreon and get some people to contribute, to like help with hosting costs and stuff. So I guess by the definition of I've been paid to do this thing, I definitely am a professional. And we didn't, I mean, it's not like we were considering quitting our jobs over it, but I mean, right. we had some dedicated patrons and we were able to cover hosting costs, and we were able to buy some of our hosts better microphones and really, help him. We used that money to help improve what we were doing, which I mean, it's Patreon. That's what it's supposed to be for.
Right.
So I was pretty happy with how things were going. And by the time we shut Flipping Tables down, we stopped it in even 150. And we hadn't missed, we had to have guest hosts a few times. Like I had to, travel for whatever, or one of us was sick or something like this. So, there were times where one of us was out, but we never missed a weekly episode. And so when we finally shut it down, we kind of looked back and we're like, well, what we set out to do was make a product we were happy with and that we enjoyed making, and to do it regularly, to get all, artsy, like to regularly produce a portfolio of work, like to be proud of what we did. And we felt like we did that. So it was pretty cool. And then when I moved on to Nostalgia Goggles, my best friend that I host with, if this blows up and we become millionaires and we get to go to Comic-Con, like that's cool. I'm not going to turn that away.
Right.
But the success metric is I want to play more video games. 'Cause I mean, I'm in my 30s. I got a full-time job. I got kids. Like I don't get to game as much as I did when I was 16, Well, I should say 14, 'cause 16 makes it sound like I was a huge dork and I didn't like go out and do cool stuff. So I'll say I don't game as much as I did when I was 14, but really that kind of carried on into college as well. but I was like, I want to game more. I want to spend more time with my friend. And I know that people have sat around the two of us and listened to us talk. So these are either the nicest, most patient people in the world who don't realize they could stop being friends with us if they wanted to, or they genuinely enjoy our conversation. So the idea of a podcast meant now we have scheduled hangout time, basically. Mm-hmm. We have to play these games, which we both want to do anyway. we have to then get together and have a fun conversation, which we both want to do anyway. And because that conversation ends up being public, it's like, we can't be as kind of flippant about letting life get in the way. You know, like, oh, the kid's sick. We can't hang out this week. But it's like, oh, no, we have to record a podcast. So I'm going to wait till, you know, my kid's in bed and then we're going to record. Or I'm going to go into work an hour late, or I'm going to get up an hour early or whatever. Like, you wouldn't make that same kind of, I don't think most people are that dedicated about their friendships. Or right. Maybe I'm just a jackass. I don't know. But I mean, most,
let's,
you know,
let's when get you... to the core of the subject here. let's talk about your jackassery here.
Yeah, finally, we've arrived at the nugget of this. This is all just, none of this is going to ship. This is all just therapy.
Yeah, let's go ahead and start the show. So I'm here with Lyons, a recreational jackass.
Yeah, I mean, this I feel like having a success metric of I want to enjoy what I'm doing is like, I'm not gonna lie, like when you hear that, like when someone says, you know, like, oh, if you love what you'll do, you'll never work a day in your life, that sounds like an excuse, right? Or a justification mm-hmm. for like they're not as successful as they'd like, or things didn't turn out the way they'd like. And I think in some areas of your life, it's not a good idea to set your standards too low, because that can cause other problems. But right. I mean, with podcasting, it's an incredibly crowded space. It's something where more and more people are getting in all the time, which I think is awesome. Like, I'm glad there are more and more new shows, because when I look at my own podcast list, the stuff I listen to every week, just from 6 months ago, let alone 4, 5, 6 years ago, it's a completely different list, right? So even though those shows are still running, it's not that they went away. It's that I kind of outgrew them, or I got tired of them, or they got repetitive, or maybe a host changed and it's not the same show anymore. So like the fact that it's easier to podcast to me is a benefit. I don't think anybody should get into this hobby because they're like, oh, this is going to become my full-time job. Like, if you want to do that, more power to you. I would absolutely love to hear about people's success stories. But someone who says, I can't quit my job if I start podcasting, is podcasting for the wrong reasons, right? They should get into it because they love their subject, or they want to learn more about their subject, or they want to have a good conversation, or they want to share their viewpoint with the world, or they want to tell a story or something. But to say like, I just want this to be my job, it's like, then you should probably just go be like a DJ in a college town. Like, someone will pay you to sit in front of a microphone somewhere if you just want to get paid to sit in front of a microphone. But if you want to get into podcasting, like, saying you want to make it your career is like, you picked basically the worst time in history to do that.
right.
And it's only getting worse.
Yeah, 10 years ago would have been key. Now, not so much.
And 10 years ago, we weren't even sure like if this was going to hang around or if it was just another fad. Like,
right.
We still have bloggers, but nobody thinks of themselves as bloggers anymore unless they're like mommy bloggers. And then it's like, that's a whole different niche because their entire thing is brand identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Podcasters, some people try to do that and it doesn't always work out. And there's like, if you look at your list of shows, there's probably a lot of like, what do you call it? Like incestuousness, where it's like, oh, this guy from this show also hosts with this other guy on this other network because they used to work together at TechCrunch or whatever. And it's like, it's like any other industry. Like, the more it matures, the more it becomes like unfortunately an old boys club, not even just like an insider's club. It's very much like an old boys club. And that's a detriment to anyone who wants to get rich off of it. So if you want to get into this, especially if you're like a minority voice or something, like, I always push anyone I know, like if they're a woman or a minority, or they have like a minority viewpoint, or they have like an interesting take on something, I'm like, man, you can get a decent microphone for $50 and you can use software to do all of your production work. And then you can get it on a Squarespace site for $8 a month. Like, please do this. Like, we need more voices, not more of the same voices.
Yeah. The variety of voices is where podcasting is lacking, I think. And I say this as, similar to you, a middle-aged white guy. Like, I'm like the key demographic. If you were to look at, hey, who publishes podcasts? Middle-aged white guys. And
that's a shame. That's why they're almost all about technology.
Right. It's middle-aged, middle-class white guys. That's who's doing podcasts, and we need more variety in that. And we need I completely agree that diversity in podcasting is something that I don't know if we need to work on necessarily as much as we need to grab those niche podcasts that are on the fringes of the middle-aged, middle-class white guy and, you know, make sure that we have those and present those opportunities.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to pat myself on the back so hard I break my own arm, but two of the shows on Sunrise Robot were entirely female hosts. One of them was two women that talked about like culture and politics. That show unfortunately did not continue on beyond the end of Sunrise Robot for a variety of reasons, but it was a good show. Like even they had amazing chemistry. Like they talked about pop culture stuff that I actually knew nothing about, but I just enjoyed. It's like I was in the cafe with them, right? Or I was in the living room just, you know, having coffee with them. And it was just really engaging to listen to them chat. And they had amazing chemistry. Those two hosts, they'd known each other for a long time. And then another show that got started on that network, the Eclectic Readers Book Club, is my wife and three of her book club mates, also all women. And they do like a monthly book club where they read the book and then they have a discussion about it. And then they're active in a bunch of communities. And I was really happy to see that show survive the kind of archiving of Sunrise Robot, because I basically went to them and I was like, listen, Sunrise Robot's going to go away because of all these reasons, but what you guys are doing doesn't have to go away. And I will continue to produce your show for you. So as long as you still want to record and you're still willing to, like, you know, put it up on the internet somewhere and run your community. Cause I mean, that's all on them, right? Like they have like this whole Goodreads community and they have like outreach and they've done interviews with authors and they give away books and prizes. And like, they have a ton of freaking work to build their community. That's all on them. So I was like, as long as you guys are willing to keep doing that stuff, I will keep producing your show. Cause I would love to see this, you know, keep happening. And,
right.
And it's cool that it continued on. It's cool that it is and always has been all, you know, female hosts. And there's even some ethnic diversity in there as well. So it's not just instead of two white dudes, it's two white ladies. Like there's a little bit more diversity in there. So it's cool. And you know, I had nothing to do with them having interesting things to say. I had nothing to do with them having good conversations and good chemistry. So I'm just glad my small contribution of like, I produce MP3 files has allowed them to like get their stuff out there. So that's, I was never on that show. I guess I never hosted it. I guess on my CV, I would have to list that as like a producer credit. Mm-hmm. Producer, mixer, engineer, sound engineer.
That one sounds smart.
Yeah, I like that one.
I mean, you want to have a diversity in your job titles as well. So, you know. You don't want to just be producing 15 shows. You want to be producing and sound engineering and maybe just the copy editor.
Yeah. I've got to go full Hollywood and just give myself like 10 credits for each show.
Right.
I have this giant IMDb page or whatever the podcasting equivalent is. Why don't we have podcasting for IMDb? Surely that's out there, right?
We do. There's two of them in work right now. Both of them have reached out to us at Ritual Misery. And we are going to be taking an active part in one because... Well, one of them was more polite when we talked to them than the other one. So that's how we decided which one to throw our backing behind. And we're going to have the director of that project on Ritual Misery very shortly, which by the time this comes out might actually have already happened. But that's actually in the works, and more power to him, because that's going to be one hell of a project. There's a lot of podcasts out there that need archiving.
Oh, yeah. Well, and have you seen the, I can't remember who did it, but somebody made like a graph, like the universe of podcasters. Mm-hmm. And you can tell exactly what most people who listen to podcasts think of as the universe of podcasts, because it's basically Twitch shows, relay shows, Accidental Tech Podcast, of course, is off to the side, but they mm-hmm. have a lot of overlap with like Relay and Twit and 5x5, because some of the Relay people used to be on 5x5. And of course, right. There's all the myths and legends we have as podcasters about like, oh, did they have a falling out? Did that guy fire that other guy? Like, do they hate each other now? Like, it's kind of bonkers. But when you look at that picture, if you're not in any way related to any of those people, you've never, you know, co-written a blog post, you've never been on a panel with them, you've never, you know, talked to them at WWDC or anything, it kind of makes you feel like small and outside. Yeah. But it's they have no dominion. It's not like you're looking at the ABC schedule for the summer. Like, they have no dominion over podcasting. That's just what people think of, but it's still that culture, I think, can turn some people off. So like, if somebody does a truly agnostic directory, like you're talking about, where it's just like, hey, every podcast can be listed in here, and mm-hmm. it's just the IMDb for podcasts, like, that's awesome. Cause then that puts everybody on a level playing field.
Yeah. And something I've always noticed, those thought bubbles, or not thought bubbles, what do they call them? Thought projects, or, you know, when you got the different
thought leaders.
Yeah. The Venn diagrams of who's been on what and how's this gone here, and it's always community specific, and you can tell usually which community they're specific to, not just because that one's in the middle, but because of how much of the Twitch show, or how many of the Twitch shows make it into there, will, you know, guide you into which aspect of Twit they're looking at from whatever perspective they're looking for their community at. And it's always interesting to see the different ones. If you look, I saw one that was specific on Relay FM, and it had a little bit of Twit here, and it had some 5x5 here, and then you look at one for 5x5, and it's got you know, Twit is a bigger bubble on the side, and, you know, you've got the Relay guys are kind of a smaller bubble off to the other side. And so if you were to look at one that had all of the podcasts that have ever commingled, it would be like looking at the sky and trying to tell which stars were part of which constellation. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, if you, depending on where you stop, like where you arbitrarily stop in the history chain, right, gives you a slightly different vantage point. Because if you look at podcasting right now, I think it's fair to say, like, it's more accessible than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. The equipment is cheaper than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. The software is more approachable than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And if you go back just a few years, those things aren't as true. And then if you go back like 5 or 10 years, those things are really untrue. So it's like, okay, what kind of people were podcasting early? It's people who understood the technology, people who understood, you know, maybe had some vision that this was like a thing that might become more approachable as time went on, and would garner bigger and bigger audiences. You know, it has the very Silicon Valley of like, you know, yeah, screw you, big cable and radio providers. Like, we're going to do our own thing. I mean, the whole reason Twit got started is because Leo Laporte basically like gave a middle finger to G4 or whoever had tech TV. And he was like, well, I'm just going to go do my own thing. And yeah, so like he took exactly what he was doing and just disaggregated it from the distribution channel, and all those things are super cool. But then if you arbitrarily stop there in history, it doesn't explain why the majority of podcasters are middle-aged white guys. It's because who had access to the technology and the training, and who was working in computer science in the late 90s and early 2000s? Oh, it was white guys in their 20s and 30s who are now middle-aged, you know? And it's like, you could go back, you know, wherever, however far you wanted to explain, you know, like how the white supremacy has happened in America in technology. But it's like, it's now that we've reached this kind of zenith of the tools being super accessible and the culture needing these other voices more than they ever have. I mean, they were always needed, but now it's easier to like bring them in. Now, if we don't, you know, have more of that stuff and we don't support more of those shows, like, we are now to blame, right? Because before it was like, oh, well, I don't own $10,000 worth of recording equipment, so it doesn't matter if I have valuable things to say. I have no way to get my message out. And like, that time has passed. So now to look around and be like, where are all the female-only podcasts? Where are all the, you know, whichever, you know, disenfranchised group you want, like, where are their podcasts? It's like, no, I guarantee you they're out there. Like, you're just not looking.
Yeah. And we're at the point now where in podcasting, with a $100 investment, and that can even be scaled down quite a bit if you're looking for, you know, basic equipment, but for a $50, $60 microphone and, you know, a decent setup in your house, you can host your files on archive.org. You can have a free WordPress site with the PowerPress Blueberry plugin, and, you know, that's all you need. That's literally all you need, because everything else is, you know, everything's free. As long as you have a decent mic, really, everything to produce and create a podcast can be completely free. And I don't know that why that message isn't getting out there as much as it is. Well, I mean, I'm sure it is. It's because half the podcasts out there are trying to sell equipment to make podcasting better that you don't need. But yep. It's so cheap and basic now. I would like to ask you about creating a network and then the dissolution or dissolvement of that network. And I'm sure there was some things you learned through that process that people would find pretty interesting.
Yeah. So we, I don't know what the particular term for I unnecessarily made something I wanted to do harder because it was interesting is, but that's what we did. We decided we wanted to do something and then we're like, how can we make this harder on ourselves? Let's do that. So we didn't really like the idea of using Squarespace, because if you host more than one podcast on a single Squarespace site, it's like, it's good for a single podcast, but it's not great for multiples. Mm-hmm. I kind of Libsyn. I'm a technologist. My entire career has been in technology. It's my hobby. So like Libsyn, I'm sure is fine, but God, it's ugly as sin. And like some of their tools and stuff are just like really crappy and old fashioned. And it like kind of turned me off. And I had designed websites before and like I had done that whole thing. And, you know, I had my Angel Fire web rings, you know, back in the day. Like I lived all that stuff. So like I was pretty comfortable with the idea of like making a website. But we also were not at this when we were designing the technology, we didn't have any money and we wanted to be sure of what our outgoing costs were going to be, because that way we could plan for it, right? Like, how much money am I willing to spend on this hobby? It's X amount of dollars. And if I know that I'm not going to go over that because I have these, you know, whatever these fixed costs are, then I can continue to participate in this hobby. Like, no one would be a mountain biker or be a skier if after your first ride, they were like, okay, that ride costs $100. And then after the next ride, they were like, oh, that one's $150. And it's like, well, but it was just like the last one, right? So like we needed to really have as much control, because, you know, time is free if you don't value your own time. So it was like, we really need to have as much control as we can, because if everything we offload to an external service is just another cost. So we used Simplecast as the host. Like, that's where the files themselves lived. And the main reason they live there is because, I mean, you said the archive.org is free. There's 1,000 places you can list them for free, but we wanted good analytics. Mm-hmm. So we put everything into Simplecast, because that was one thing I was like, I don't want to skimp on analytics. We need data. We need to know if people are listening. Right. And if they're not, we need to be able to decide if we don't care, but we can't guess, right? Google Analytics is not good enough for podcasting. Mm-hmm. Fireside didn't exist at that time. You know, there was kind of just like middling options if you wanted to do a network. Single podcasts, lots of solutions, but a network was hard. So we used Simplecast as the back end, and then we I used Middleman, which is like a static site generator, and I wrote some simple plugins for it. And basically we had a flat website that looked like it had a CMS behind it, but it totally super did not.
Wow.
Yeah, it had a really polished, pretty awesome look. My old co-host on Flipping Tables, when he left Flipping Tables, he went to be a graphic designer. So he did all the artwork. A friend of ours, one of the other hosts, who his boyfriend is a graphic designer and an artist, he did our logo. And like, we were able to really, you know, pull on connections and our own skills. And that machine that ran Sunrise Robot, which we affectionately called Helios, which there's some, I can't even remember, but there's some goofy acronym that is. It was a huge hassle, because I don't know how much you know about web design and some of those design tools, but flat file websites deploy when you deploy them.
Right.
So like Flipping Tables came out on Tuesday mornings, which meant at 11 o'clock on Monday night, I had to publish the website so that the new episode would go out.
Right.
Because there's like no way to pre-schedule that. So, and I mean, there are like, you can get really fancy and have like cron jobs and you can do like Git hooks and scheduling nonsense. But we kind of never got to the point where it was such an inconvenience that we built better tooling. So we sort of like we had something that sounded really good and that looked really good and that was held together with like bubblegum and toothpicks. And we're like, you know what? This is fine. Like nobody ever sees the back. They don't have to know what that process is like. Jeez. And we ran with that literally the entire length of the show. And that's what the archive is today. So actually, I took all of the episodes and just uploaded them to my web host. So they're all accessible, but I'm no longer getting analytics or anything. I have no idea if people go in there and listen to stuff anymore. Because I wanted it to, I mean, it's my monument, right? Like it's our way of remembering that we did this and we were proud of it. And if people still want to go and stumble across it or something, like it's still there. But I certainly wasn't going to pay hosting fees to get analytics on something I was no longer pursuing. So when we decided to shut it down, the first question we had to ask was for each show, like, is this show going to continue? And if so, how? One of them, it's a sad story I won't get into, but there was no question that one of the shows was now done forever. So that show just went into permanent archive. One of the other shows was like a maybe. And unfortunately, that was one of the shows that had two female hosts. I really wanted that show to continue, but there were some very legitimate reasons that that one had to be spun down. The music and culture show we did, my co-host Mike was also a co-host on that. That one was like flipping tables, where we really obsessed over like, can we find a new co-host? Can this become a monologue show? Can it be reworked in a way where it's different enough to justify bringing in another voice, but it's similar enough to act like it's still the same show? And we just couldn't quite find the right answers to those questions. So we felt like it was better to retire that. Cause I think it's better to start a new show that's similar than to continue a show that everyone is like, oh, this is different.
Right.
You know, so there's a very strong argument to be made about your audience isn't going to follow you to a new show and they're not going to change the RSS feed that they're subscribed to. And it's a big pain in the ass and you're going to lose people. And that's all valid. And I wouldn't take that away from anyone who's trying to build a real audience and get sponsors and maybe make this their job. But for us, since the product we were producing was the end in of itself, because we couldn't feel sure that what we were doing would continue on with a new host and that it would still feel the same, but different in okay ways. Like we just had to put both of them down and turn them into archives. And then Eclectic Readers, happily, that one was able to survive in no small part because everyone involved with that show didn't change what they were doing, right?
Right.
The host kept hosting it and I kept mixing it. So I just upload MP3 files to a different website now than I used to. Their shows actually run on Fireside now, which does scheduling. So I can upload MP3s ahead of time and it's super great.
Nice. As far as bringing the network down though, like, is that something that, are you still in contact with all the people that, you know, put in those shows and are they still working on other projects that you might be interested in doing later? Or is that just like, was that a clean break for a lot of those shows?
So we were all friends and or family. There was a lot of like, hey, my brother always wanted to do this, or my friend always wanted to do that. So there was a lot of ties that were there beforehand and that, you know, fortunately have persisted afterwards. It'd be really terrible if somebody got a divorce when their podcast ended. Most of those social connections are obviously the family ones have persisted. But the majority of people who were involved were not podcasters before. The two that were have looked into other projects and, you know, I want to support them, both of them, in any way I can, whether it's advice or if I can, you know, offer any tech help or be a guest or just cheer them on, you know, whatever it takes to help them get back into it if they want to go back to it. But several of our hosts were not podcasters before. So for them, it was kind of like a fun experiment. They enjoyed it. And now they're probably done with podcasting forever. But they were all awesome. Like I listened to every single show we released, even though I only produced two of them. I actually listened to the other four, like as a listener, right? Like just as a regular subscriber. So, you know, when those shows retired and went into archive, Like, it wasn't just, oh, this thing that I work on is over. It was like, oh, crap, these four shows that I love are now retiring. Like, so it was, you know, we stayed very close to it, and it was very personal to us. So it was more like, I don't want to say anything too depressing. Like, it wasn't like putting down the family dog. It was it was like, you know, your father's heirloom watch that he got from his father's father. Like, it finally stopped working and it can't be fixed. Like, it was far more of an emotional, like, kind of loss, which is why we all agreed we were going to keep the archive up, because we wanted that, you know, that shining city on the hill, that, you know, the monument off in the distance that on a clear day you can still see Sunrise Robot, you know, and like, right. You know, and if people do go and stumble on those old links, or they go and find it, that's awesome. The Eclectic Readers archive is still there. So if somebody finds that, it will auto redirect them to the new thing, since they're still releasing episodes. So it actually does have a little bit of an actual utility to it, other than just being a, you know, a gravestone.
It's very cool. Very cool. We've talked a lot of things that you've improved on and done over the years. What advice would you have for people getting into podcasting today? And what would you say to those of us that are already podcasting?
For anybody getting into podcasting, this is advice I've heard from 1,000 other people, and it's super cliche, and I'm really sorry. But it's like, just do it. Just, the software is really approachable. The hardware is cheap. If anybody tells you you need expensive hardware or expensive software, they're trying to keep you out. Like, don't listen to them. It's super cliche advice to be like, go for it. But I think it's something you need to hear over and over, or, you know, maybe I'll be the right cheerleader for the right person. Because I want more quality shows. I want more interesting viewpoints. I want more funny stories. I want more creative takes on things. Like, I mean, I'm in tech. Like, a lot of the podcasts I listen to are still tech podcasts. So I have noticed that the ones I've stopped listening to are the ones that are repetitive with. So if there's two shows that are covering the same story, I don't need to hear that news twice. What I need to do is hear it from the more interesting people, right? Who have a smarter take, or a viewpoint I've never considered, or whatever like that. So I've given up a lot of well-established tech podcasts to listen to newer shows that are covering the exact same damn stories. Like, right. It's not that their subject matter is new and novel. It's that they are interesting. They have their own stories. They have a different viewpoint. So, you know, if somebody wants to do a Twit style show, or a Relay FM, or a 5x5 style show, like, that's fine. Definitely still do that, but contribute something new and interesting. You can be a straight white guy and still have new and interesting things to say. So it's not like I'm only, you know, saying to minorities and disenfranchised groups, but it's like, don't try to be Leo Laporte or Dan Benjamin. Like, Leo Laporte is already an awesome Leo Laporte. Like, he has that down, right? Dan Benjamin is probably the best at being Dan Benjamin. So, like, I love his shows. I still listen to several 5x5 shows, but I don't really need another person who sounds and looks and has the same thoughts and opinions exactly like he does. Like, he's already got that covered.
Right.
So yeah, for new people, like, just do it. The stuff is cheaper than it's ever been. If you have virtually no money, I will still listen to your show, even if you record with your smartphone, as long as it's interesting. I've never given up a show for audio quality. I have given up shows for terrible hosts. Like, no, I still listen to a couple of shows that the audio quality is so bad, like, I want to yell at them on Twitter. but they have useful enough things to say that I continue to put up with it. But if someone is not interesting, or they're harmful in some way, like, I will, you know, unsubscribe, like, muted, blocked, banned. Like, I don't need any of that. So yeah, like, that's for new folks that, you know, take out my pom poms, like, go for it. Tell me where your show is. I'll check it out. For established people, y'all have no excuse. Like, your audio quality should not be crap. you've been in the game for a while. Like, please, learn some basic mic technique. Please, you know, take your cell phone headset off and get like a $50, you know, Yeti or something. Like, there's, yeah. You know, if you're using a condenser mic instead of a dynamic mic, you have to treat the space you're in, because room noise is okay in measure, but after that, it just sounds like you're talking to me inside of a toilet. Like, there are production quality things that are, they don't cost money, they cost effort.
Right.
So like I use a Shure SM58 because I am louder than holy hell, and this is a really good dynamic mic. So this works well for my delivery style. If I was pacing around in a well-treated room, I would want a different microphone, right? So it's those things, like some of them cost money, but most of them cost effort. Like if you're gonna continue to podcast forever, you should get better at your craft, and audio quality is a part of that, because I will listen to your show even if it sounds like garbage, but I'll like you less.
that's a good way of putting it. If people have a new show that they think that you should be listening to, or an older show that maybe you missed out on, where can they reach you to tell you these things?
So the easiest way is on Twitter. That's my social network of choice. So I'm at Lions in Beta on Twitter. And that's my website too.
There's Lions with a Y.
Yes, Lions like the city in Colorado, or the town in France, or the animal if you can't spell. And there's actually just like my final aside here, because I think I've done enough tangents for all of us. There's a podcasting story to that handle. So In Beta was a 5x5 podcast hosted by Kevin Purdy and Gina Trapani. I've never been one for celebrity. Like, I know some podcaster names because they're inescapable, but I listen to a lot of shows that I honestly have no idea what the host names are. I don't know what other shows they're on. I don't know what other things they've gotten up to, because I'm bad at that. Like, I'm bad at pop culture. even in the spheres that interest me, but In Beta, Kevin Purdy and Gina Trapani, like, they're so smart, and they had really interesting things to say about like up and coming technology, and like things that were changing in startups, as well as like huge companies like Google. And that In Beta tag, it was a reference to like how Gmail had In Beta on it for like 7 years or something ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And it's so corny, but I really loved the idea of like everything is in beta all the time. Like, if it's not getting better, it's dying, right? It should be a constant reflection and improvement and trying new things. And even if those things don't work, you still got to try something. And then if that doesn't work, you try something else, right? Like this constant kind of reflective growth in your personal life, in your professional life, in your relationships, and your hobbies, and in whatever you're doing. And when I needed, because my old handle was like super, like it wasn't bad, but it was like really unprofessional. So it was like time to give that up. It didn't have like curse words or anything stupid in it, but it was like, oh, this is the handle of like a child. And now I need like my lifelong handle. And this is where my blog will be. And this will be my email address and everything. So I spent way too much time thinking about it. And then when I was thinking about like a little snappy phrase, cause you know, my first name's David, like everyone is their first name is David. Like, I know you think your first name's not David, but if you check your birth certificate, it's probably David. So like I couldn't use my name anywhere. So I was like, I need something like zappy and zippy and techie. And I settled on
and memorable
and memorable and unique. And I knew that I would be able to get it on other services, cause it was unlikely that somebody had already claim jumped it. And I settled on, you know, Lions in Beta to remind myself of this like constant reflection and development. And when Gina Trapani left podcasting to go to her, because she was a freelancer and she went to her full-time job, and she left podcasting, like, I was heartbroken. Like, In Beta ended completely. A couple of the other shows that she was on, they're different. Like, they're still good, and I still listen to one of them, but like, it's not the same, and I want Gina back. Yeah. So that's, yeah, man, if somebody, if she is podcasting and I just haven't heard about it, you definitely need to tweet that at me.
at Lions in Beta. And of course, lionsinbeta.com, and then nostalgiagoggles.audio for the podcast you're currently throwing all your heart and soul into.
That's the one. Yeah. I love that .audio domain. It does what it says on the tin.
That's perfect. Actually. You can find me on Twitter at Ethan Kane. You can find the show on Twitter at Undaunted Cast. See, that's one of those things like I had to figure out, because Undaunted was a great name that someone else had already jumped on Twitter. You can find everything that I'm up to at ritualmisery.com. And thank you to Kevin McLeod for allowing me to use your music for this podcast and others. And for me, for Lions, and for all the inspiring and veteran podcasters out there, thank you for joining us on this journey.